That's beautiful.
She won't wear it, though. It's too valuable.
Yeah.
I'll wear it eventually.
Photo shoots, man.
It's
you
too
know
nice.
It's not as technically valuable as these Chamorro jackets I have.
Photo shoots.
I've been going.
Yeah, I've been going. And I'm recording us all contingency mode.
Right.
As well.
All right. Well,
now it's
how
a bit
you
too
doing?
Dark.
How are you doing?
I had more time. Like I set up a really nice lighting thing for our last episode.
I perform
James,
better
wanna,
when I can't see. So,
do you want to do the thing, buddy?
Sure. Yeah. How are you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, man.
And how are you, Luke?
Oh, I'm great.
You,
thanks, buddy.
No problem, man. It's really nice to see you. I mean, it's...
I got the whole family over here tonight.
You guys don't... You guys, it's just normal again down there, isn't it?
Yeah, back at it again. I can hear the sirens blaring in the background.
Yeah, but last time I spoke to you, it was like you had an app on your phone that was telling you there was people breaking into your house with, you know, masks on and all sorts of things. And now it's like you're going to gigs.
Yeah, we're back to kind of like an average amount of assault.
Average amount.
There was actually
of fear.
A big gig. Yeah, back to normal. Yeah, I'm playing a gig. We're getting the old gang back together next week, man. It's all happening. Crazy. I don't know. It's weird.
What's your set list? Covers?
You talking
originals?
Good Time Boys, right?
Yeah, yeah. The 70s biker blues. Basically,
want to just run us through the set here a little bit?
You know, maybe a little Fog Hat, Slow Ride.
Yeah.
Maybe a little Boys Are Back in Town.
Know that one.
Gee, I don't know. Maybe a little Nick Lowe in there somewhere.
I feel like Slow Ride.
That kind of like as a Christian Wargo legacy piece?
Well, he was the cruel to be kind guy.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't really been the same without him. It's kind of like we're missing that Nash high harmony. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
I've never seen you guys do Slow Ride. I'm sure that rips.
Very ripping.
Do you do the extended kind of jam out at the end? You know, and there's that... if you listen to it, it's actually like 8 minutes long. Yeah.
No, we don't do the full version. I don't think that the average Hollywood attention span would be able to handle the jam element. We kind of try to keep it pretty tight, as you guys may have seen in the past. There's a lot of medleys. You know, you can tell when they're starting to dip in attention. You just switch to the next song. It's almost more like a DJ set type of scenario.
You still got that, like, Moon Age Daydream kind of medley going?
We medley the hell out of that, man.
Strong
that's
stuff.
Into Hotel California, I mean, that's, you could say, kind of their signature
move.
Tune. Yeah.
Thomas still up there?
Thomas on lead guitar, Jimmy Sweet, George Holdcroft, Richard Gowan on drums, all stars.
Spursk's out?
Haven't heard much from him. He might be doing something else these days. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking now, you got me thinking that with the Nash talk, that, you know, maybe Christian Wargo from Fleet Fox's fame has actually, you know, probably rightly holds. He's like the most important high harmony of his generation, potentially. I'm thinking. Whose is more famous than his in the last 20 years?
I mean, to me, he's the key to that group.
No doubt. Completely agree.
Well, as far as the remaining members at this point.
I'd just like to take this moment to welcome everybody to Impossible Way of Life, your weekly blues podcast. You know, James, as you would say, we've got, you know, our regular James Younger here to my
certainly
left.
Here.
And then,
thank you, appreciate that.
And then we've got a very special guest tonight, our foreign correspondent to my bottom here, Luke Paquin, down in Los Angeles. Luke, welcome to the show. Thank you. And gentlemen, all I can say is let's talk blues.
Yeah, oh, man. Think of it as kind of like a round for you guys at home. Just imagine this as a kind of Charlie Rose like round table setup, like long kind of like
hard talk, hard talk,
kind of an author, and you know, a Knights of the Round kind of table, and it's hard talk, exactly,
and it's hard blues talk.
And imagine when Johnny said, "Let's," I was thinking about this. Actually, I was kind of workshopping this. It was like the idea that there's like a show. There probably is a show called like Let's Talk Blues, but that like to they like everyone gets ready, and he kind of like. The guy, the host, who's like the Charlie Rose type, says, "Gentlemen, we're ready, okay? Let's talk blues," and presses something, maybe like a stopwatch, or maybe it's
a big
like
red button.
A big red button that plays as like Layla or something.
Yeah. And then the camera goes like, across everybody. Well,
the important thing about those chat shows like Charlie Rose and Hard Talk is there's absolutely nothing funny about any of it.
Certainly not.
Well, there won't be tonight either.
There's nothing funny about the blues.
I don't want to hear any joking around with you two tonight, all right?
No, there's certainly nothing funny about the blues. I know that.
Jameson.
Okay.
Wow. Blues. Bluesy.
Van Morrison blues.
Thin Lizzy. Yeah.
Van Morrison, number one white blues vocalist in history, yeah or nay?
I think so. He's up there. I think of him more, I mean, blues, more soul, R&B. But, you know, it's all obviously rhythm and
Long
blues.
John Baldry.
Yeah, right.
He was in that list. Elvis.
Yeah. He's
Elvis is pretty good, yeah, for
He's
that.
Pretty bluesy.
I don't really listen to much... I don't really listen to much pre-wah-wah pedal stuff. To me, it kind of started with
Electric
Hendrix.
Mud?
Yeah, kind of Electric Mud.
Yeah,
Hendrix. That's anything before that. It just seemed like it wasn't really like mic'd up properly or something.
What about like I was listening to this record tonight, like Junior Wells with Buddy Guy. You know, that's kind of mid-60s, kind of around the same time. But that's pretty clean, but it's still kind of ripping electric blues, you know.
I think they had a couple of mics in there.
Yeah.
But it's still pre-tuner.
Okay.
Yeah, you were talking about this. That's right. Yeah. But you would think even Hendrix is pre-tuner, no?
Very out of tune. It's almost unlistenable, some of those live bootlegs.
Yeah, I think that's where people kind of talk about his like... You know, kind of raw emotional blues as opposed to it, like the more technical tuned blues.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you hear all this tuned stuff, it's hard to go back. I mean, they tune the shit out of stuff these days, the vocals, the snare.
Well, I mean, guys, we got a lot of ground to cover, but what I'd like to know is, Luke, okay. You're kind of what we like to think of as like our man on the street sort of blues, you know, expert. I like to think so anyway. And I was wondering if you could explain to us about the difference between what's technically makes you a good blues player versus just kind of emotionally or, you know, good for a laugh kind of showmanship kind of stuff. You know, people talk about this. What's the difference? Tuning? Is it about tuning?
It starts with a nice, solid Boss standard tuning pedal.
TU-3, all the way back to the TU-1, I guess. A strobe tuner.
Before that, it was kind of, you had to kind of do the whole thing by ear, which is way too much to ask of somebody that's
on acid.
In that much pain.
Yeah, exactly.
And has gone through that much heartache and had their wife do them wrong like that. Like, they don't have time to, like,
tune.
Put a pedal down and plug in a, you know, like, they're going straight into the amp, baby.
Yeah.
Or not even that.
Straight off the stoop, honestly.
Yeah, they might just be acoustic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like what people on the internet, like on kind of whatever it is, bluesrank.com.
I'm actually on a website here called Blues Junction. that kind of okay. like has a has specifically has a forum on the difference between emotional and technical guitarists.
Well, there you go. Maybe you could enlighten me on this subject a bit.
Well, it's heated. It gets really heated, actually, because, you know, a lot of people kind of bring up the kind of Steve Vai, Van Halen, like technical guitarists. Like, so, but when it gets right down to kind of, when it gets right down kind of to the bluesiest stuff, you know, a lot of people sort of saying like, you know, Hendrix is a fantastic guitarist technically because his stuff is a lot harder to play than it sounds. So there's a really interesting kind of theory there. But it gets, listen, on all of these websites, it gets heated really quickly. And here is no exception because there's this kind of tete-a-tete kind of face-off between Bad Boy and a guy, Alpha Centauri. They're kind of handles. And basically, Bad Boy starts by saying, I can't think of a guitarist that had greater technical ability, emotion, and songwriting all in one, like more than Hendrix. But then he goes to mention Prince, Zappa, Fripp, May, Hendrix, and Page, and Tom Morello, often on these lists. And just like, hold with me here, because it kind of gets interesting. And okay. Bad Boy has a problem with this, because he says, you know what? I agree with you on all of these people, except for Brian May. And that's when Alpha Centauri gets really kind of pissed off. And he just says, Bad Boy, it's not up to you who is and isn't technically great. Brian May has been consistently cited as one of the best technical guitarists for a long time. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, by guitarists technically better than you. So we're kind of shots fired here, and it keeps going. Bad Boy responds.
Got personal.
Yeah, it gets personal. Bad Boy responds, this is a forum, and I'm allowed to express my opinions. I just want to say I can play May's stuff with no problem. So for me, he's not that great technically. And Alpha Centauri responds, if you can play it easily, prove it.
Wow.
And, you know, why would you dismiss, you know, my case? Straight up, stop dodging the question. Prove it. Prove that you can play like Brian May. And Bad Boy says, what's up with you? Why does this even matter? You don't get the right to judge me musically. You have no idea how long I've been playing guitar and the things I've accomplished. It keeps going, and Alpha Centauri just says, you know what? Just prove it. All I'm saying is prove it. Until you prove it, you know? Like, and I think that's it. Pick an axe off the wall. Show me that you
can play.
Settle
this on the stage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? He doesn't prove it. It goes on for a long time, and he won't do it. And he's like, you're dodging my question. Just prove it.
He can't. He probably can't play like Brian May. I'm sure he can't. Yeah.
And he says, Alpha Centauri, after finally Bad Boy says, I can't be fucked with this conversation anymore. Alpha Centauri says, see, we knew this would happen. Why waste our time? So, you know, it gets really heated, this stuff.
He called him out and the guy didn't step up. No. And he basically got punked.
He got punked. And I think that's sort of like putting your foot down and being able to play on demand. Right. You know, Mayer,
well, that's the blues. That's the kind of blues.
Yeah,
Mayer
is often cited as one of the sort of modern day great blues players, and I often see it's because he's good at improvising. He's good at playing on demand. You know.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, they used to battle. You know, in the way that maybe like a rapper would in more modern times. And
true, kind of an 8 mile thing.
I've seen Mayer go up against some of the greats on stage over there, maybe at the House of Blues over there on Sunset Strip, rest in peace. And you know, I've seen him up there with Billy Gibbons and Slash and Bonamassa, and he holds his own, man.
I believe that. I mean,
Bonamassa is a guy whose name keeps coming up time and time again when you're looking at modern blues aficionados.
Just
he might be the top guy on the scene right now.
I don't know a ton about I've seen a lot of things about that. You know, blues is all about the blues tradition, right? And all I know is back in the day in Chicago, I've seen the Ken Burns jazz and that kind of stuff, and a lot of these jazz blues artists, they were forced to go into these clubs in New Orleans.
Forced.
Yeah, or New York or Chicago, and just get, you know, it'd be kind of like if the piano was free or the guitar was free or whatever you're doing, you got to just step in there and show people what you got. And there would be there actually would be battles.
Kind of cage fighting, kind of.
So what I'm saying is that Alpha Centauri sounds like he knows what's going on.
I agree.
He asked him to step up to the battle, and the dude didn't do it. I mean, obviously you're familiar with the great blues film Crossroads, starring Ralph Macchio and Steve Vai.
Yeah.
And that whole thing kind of culminates at the end. He's got a battle to win his soul back from Satan, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out that the only way he's able to defeat the devil, the blues devil, is to pull out a little bit of his Juilliard, classically trained, some of those licks.
And
the blues man, it's even far more technical than the blues licks. And the technicality
of trumps.
The technical trumps over the emotion. So that should be the end of that debate right there.
That's kind of funny because my Aunt Jeannie, a friend of the pod, actually sent me something today. She sent me a video, Chopin, Prelude in E minor. And I was like, oh, you know, kind of cool, some classical music. And then right up, followed it up with a video, Jimmy Page, Prelude in E minor.
Interesting.
By Chopin. And it's him like in maybe late 70s just coming back out on stage and just like ripping some Chopin on the guitar. Well, so that's sort of a similar.
Playing with a bow.
Yeah, that was from the Charles Bronson Death Wish 2 soundtrack.
Jimmy Page
composed it. That was his first thing back after his buddy Bonham had died.
Yeah, it looked kind of 80s. It looked kind of 80s, yeah.
Yeah, and he was just really strung out. And
he's kind of slowly turning into Miles Davis. They're both kind of snake charming kind of vibes.
Yeah, it was before he had his big comeback with Paul Rodgers. No, it was the Firm.
Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying. But, I saw that video. It was very sad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In terms of the showmanship and the emotion, that's kind of all he had.
I know.
Going for him that night.
I don't think he would have won the battle with the devil with that one.
He did not have a tuner.
A lot of people, you know, kind of are of the kind of belief that, you know, the distinction between technique, you know, and emotion is, it's kind of like an Ouroboros, that it's like, who are you or who am I to say that someone can't be thoroughly moved by technique? You know, like technical ecstasy, if you will.
Well, I mean, I'm just confused about whether it has anything to do with music whatsoever. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Because it seems to me that what people call technical is like a clean sound. Like, it's about like hammer-on hitting the fret with your finger like precisely or something. Like, because they say that Jimmy Page, it's not good because he's moving too quickly and he's sloppy on the fingerboard.
Yeah.
But they're saying that Clapton's technically perfect because every note he hits is like cleanly struck.
Well, so he would never risk it.
He wouldn't risk it. Exactly.
He wouldn't even take the chance of being embarrassed because he's so deeply, deeply insecure and troubled, and there's no way he's going to risk like being up there with Knopfler and getting clowned in any way.
But yet, you told me on the phone 2 days ago that Clapton's probably the top blues guitarist.
Well, that's just pure math, pure numbers.
Right.
We wouldn't be here without him. I mean, it's baseball, it's beers, it's brewskis, it's
titties,
it's
Nick
Nolte, Clapton,
it's Baltimore.
He perfected it.
Season 2 Wire.
Well, you personally also are a big fan of his suits and that late 80s look, right?
Yeah, I was just watching the Chuck Berry, the Hail Hail Rock and Roll documentary, and it's Chuck Berry and Clapton and Keith Richards all jamming.
Yeah.
And Clapton's the only one that even knows any of the licks. Chuck Berry doesn't even remember his own tunes, and Clapton comes in there and just reminds them all what the blues is really all about.
Yeah, he's kind of, I feel like Clapton's kind of the white whale, like the Ahab of the blues. He's kind of like the collector. Like, these things are his. He's like the judge in Blood Meridian, where he's like, I'm right. Like fascinated by these like licks, because once I own them, they're mine to destroy.
Well, he's the judge, jury, and executioner
of the blues.
Yeah,
I mean, he called his album Crossroads. He completely co-opted that term and even started a whole festival.
Yeah,
all with the same name, and he invites all the people whose licks he's adopted over the years, and they all kind of jam together until one by one they all pass away, and he's still there.
Do you think that he's do you think he's passing on his legacy to Mayer? In the, I mean, I showed you that video where he calls specifically in there the he calls John Mayer a master, a blues master, but he specifically came to this realization watching John Mayer perform Magnolia by J.J. Cale.
There you go.
Partial lineage.
Partial lineage.
Well, if Mayer had wanted to do just strictly pure blues, he would maybe have even surpassed Clapton by now, but he unfortunately is kind of a bit scattered creatively and likes to touch on a lot of different kind of areas, and he also spent a bit of time trying to chase the kind of...
Pussy?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say pop charts, but I guess those are kind of synonymous.
He was the hottest cock in Hollywood for a while there.
Yeah, I think now that he's, you know, he's about our age. I don't know how old you are, but
yeah,
he's kind of gotten to the point now where he's kind of going back to his blues roots.
He's 41 years old, I think.
I wondered to talk. I mean, this is what kind of prompted this sort of emergency blues episode, is that he's put out this new single and video and album, I guess. And with an album cover that, you know, harkens back certainly to a period in the 1980s, late 70s, or one could say to James Younger's own album.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's a partial lineage there aesthetically, I think.
Yeah. We were
probably both influenced by American Gigolo.
Yeah. And but I listened to a bit of this album, and I didn't really hear any blues at all. Personally, it sounded like Toto, that one song, and then I don't know. Why is he so revered as a blues artist when he makes sort of music that's not strictly blues? That's what I want
to
know.
He'll make sure to show up to like a B.B. King gig every, you know, year or two, or whoever's playing the local blues place, and just rip a few solos. Just to make sure they don't forget about him, you know what I mean?
Do you ever see him do any of his work with the Dead?
I haven't, but it's a good thing they got him, because it felt like their legacy was starting to dip a bit, and they needed a little help with... They're trying to keep doing like Dodger Stadium, and
yeah,
I don't know what the equivalent would be.
We Rogers asked Dan Arena. Horn. Yeah, we asked Dan Horn about that, and he said that he didn't like to say the names John Mayer and Jerry Garcia in the same sentence. So that's where kind of deadheads like him stand, right?
I don't want you to misunderstand what he was saying there, because it can be read a few different ways. I think he was saying that out of reverence for both Mayer and Jerry Garcia.
It's a mutually beneficial marriage.
Right.
Kind of a trade agreement, really.
Like what they're losing in like Dan Horn, they're gaining in like people that would actually buy a ticket.
Yeah, like what they're losing in blues, what they're losing in the mixolydian, they're getting back double fold in the pentatonic.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the Dan Horns never made it past the parking lot in the first place, you know.
Yeah. Right. But yeah. I mean, if Mayer had stayed in the Dead for longer, there's a good chance he and Dan Horn would have probably shared the stage in the next 10 years.
Is he, for some he,
If Lesh goes, then Horn's probably up? Next in line.
Is Horn up next?
I think so.
How's Bleeker feel about that?
Well, I think Bleeker would say that Horn's definitely put in the time.
Okay.
Plus, Bleeker's, you know, he's busy with...
He's surfing on the Baja.
His surfing, new surfing career down in the Baja.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's... Well, okay, this brings me to something I really wanted to talk to you guys, which is that, you know, as we all know, there's two major camps of blues.
Modern day blues?
Yeah, I mean, you could call them families, the two families.
Kind of Capulets, Montagues kind of thing?
Yeah, sort of, and we got the two godfathers at the top in Steve Jobs and Paul Allen. I'm talking, of course, about Apple versus Microsoft when it comes to blues, right?
That makes
sense. And I did some research into this, and I thought it was really interesting to find out kind of who's in which camp, because it is really defined, and there's no crossover whatsoever. And it really actually is kind of old school, new school, which was interesting, because, you know, we all heard about this when Quincy Jones said that Paul Allen was his favorite guitar player. And so, you know, we've got Quincy in Paul Allen's court, and we've got, obviously, Hendrix is on that side, even though he's dead, but because he's Paul Allen's favorite guitar player. Then we've got some old school heavy hitters here, because I don't know if you guys knew this, but Paul Allen put together a little band. It was called Paul Allen and the Underthinkers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Six Strings from Hell was the name of the tour or the show.
Yeah. I believe Joe Walsh was in that band.
Yeah, he was. So teamed up with Anna Nancy Wilson of Heart.
Okay.
Definitely a blues, some blues power hitters there.
Seattle, Hendrix.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Allen, totally.
I'll tell you right now, well, I mean, Derek Trucks I'm going to get onto a little bit later, but if, correct me if I'm wrong, but...
You got a whole Trucks piece planned?
I mean, I just was reading on a website earlier about like the best kind of new blues, and a guy made the point that he prefers the Derek Trucks band to the Tedeschi Trucks because he feels that Derek Trucks is just a bit more bluesy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. That's good.
Not all that pesky singing.
So
I just want to interrupt you, sorry, because I'm thinking that there is a little bit of a crossover here you need to put into your, you know, that kind of pinboard, kind of chart, Kaiser Sose, kind of Beautiful Mind thing behind you.
Yeah.
Because Mayer's worked with Hart.
Well, that may be so, but we all know where Mayer's allegiances lie.
I know, but I'm saying there's a little bit of a crossover.
Okay, there's some crossover. Okay, all right, fair enough. Barracuda. I mean, I did someone's about 10 minutes still of research on this, so. we've got, obviously, Joe Walsh, as you mentioned. Also, the album came out, and all proceeds benefited the nonprofit EMP Museum in Seattle, so that's nice.
Oh, yeah. So it's a huge
Ringo
Seattle
Starr.
Thing, yeah.
Ringo Starr played drums. Interesting. So he's picked a side.
Really? In Paul Allen's band?
Yeah. He put Ringo.
Him and Walsh are brothers, right?
Yeah. Him and Walsh are big. And Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders, interestingly.
That's nice.
So you know they got a hell of a band on the Microsoft side.
It is a hell of a band, yeah.
And then I had a little bit of trouble.
So can we just go through? I just want to go through that band before you get to the... Let's just really kind of lay it out easy, because you did a good job and I interrupted you. So we got Ringo's on drums.
Yeah.
Ringo's on drums.
Yeah.
We got Joe Walsh, Paul Allen kind of dueling.
Yeah.
And no one can say which one's better. I mean, it's hard to. Like,
yeah,
but they're
even
kind
throw
of
Hendrix
inspired
in
by
that.
Jimmy. They're inspired by Jimmy.
Yeah, and according to Quincy, who's the producer of the whole thing, he thinks that Paul Allen could hold a candle to Jimmy, yeah. And then we got
Paul
Hart.
Allen's super yacht when he said that.
Yep, and then we got Hart,
Ann
and Nancy Wilson, and Chrissy Hynde. Kind of probably doing some singing, Nancy and Chrissy's case, some licking as well, you know?
Yeah,
so that's cool.
You got anything to say about that lineup, Lou?
I don't. I'm not familiar with much. I like some of that early Pretenders stuff, but I haven't really followed Ringo or Walsh in about 30 years. It sounds like some people that just had a lot of extra time on their hands and weren't really doing much that week. Especially the poor Heart gals. They seem, they're always doing those like extreme makeover shows, coming out with different faces and like surgeries and different kind of, I think they did the stomach thing on one of those VH1 like staple with the stars or something.
Are they like sister and mother? Oh, like sister and daughter? Or daughter and mother or something?
Sister and sister.
Oh, they're sister-sister. Kind of Tia Tamara kind of feel?
Exactly.
Okay.
Or just any sort of sisters, you know? Yeah.
Okay. Like a Mario and Luigi situation.
I mean, that whole thing sounds frightening to me.
Yeah. So then on the Apple side, we all know that Steve Jobs 15 years ago launched GarageBand. To celebrate the launch, he got blues guitarist John Mayer to demonstrate some of the amp simulators on it.
Yeah.
And from that, so I was trying to figure out like who's on in this camp, and it was quite difficult, but I did the research and I have figured it out. It's who kind of championed
GarageBand.
This
already sounds far more legitimate.
Yeah.
Just between GarageBand and Mayer, they've already completely annihilated this other Joe Walsh Ringo band that you were talking about.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's and like, they
it's like taking candy from a baby at this point.
Yeah, it's true. And what I found is right after GarageBand launched, you had all these artists kind of jumping on board on that side of the fence. And it's more of a kind of like hip-hop R&B. You got Kendrick Lamar, Rihanna, Grimes, which takes you to the Elon Musk. Obviously, he's probably going to get into the blues game soon. We haven't
space
seen him.
Blues, yeah.
We haven't seen him. Well, he did launch some Bowie music into space. That was something.
True.
Justice, they got into it. And then I'm throwing Clapton in because of his allegiance with Mayer, and that there was a video of him playing through the blues tooth of a Tesla car playing Layla.
Right.
So he's all about the future of blues.
It's also getting,
making it cordless, making it wireless, you know.
Technical.
No amps. Yes.
Technical blues.
Exactly. Technology. Yeah. Tech blues.
Technique. Technical blues.
Showcasing the technology itself almost more than the music.
Yeah. Maybe that's what being a great technical guitarist is.
It could be.
I mean,
we've kind of gone full circle here, because it started with like the idea of technical might involve tuners, which is kind of like showcasing the like
at the very least
technology available. And now we're talking about kind of, you know, tuning like on GarageBand, like using Liverpool Crunch.
There's a tuner
preset.
There's a tuner on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah. It's that kind
I'm
of
on
thing.
GarageBand as we and you, speak.
And you look at these other guys, Joe Walsh, I can't see Joe Walsh giving a shit about being in tune either. Like, he probably was, but like he was too messed up to really worry about it, you know?
I think he was too focused on Eagles riffs, frankly.
Well, yeah. I think James Gang, maybe not so many tuners, but then once the Eagles, he made that transition, they started tuning up a little bit right around.
Well, you
that.
Have to, you have to for that, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that kind of country.
To him, though, maybe. They kind of brought him in for his rock and roll kind of lifestyle.
It's hard
from everything that I've heard, he was just absolutely terrified of all those guys the entire time, and that's why he says now that's why he had to be so fucking blacked out through the late 70s and early 80s, because he was just so intimidated by the machine that was Eagles.
Well, there the Eagles are
not the Eagles.
Oh, Eagles. Is it not the Eagles? Are they called Eagles? Is that the band name?
It's just Eagles, bro.
Really? Wow. I don't know. I'll tell you, you know, Ringo also doesn't seem like he's really that into tuning. I can't see him ever pulling out a drum key and like tuning up the snare. I can't ever picture him doing that.
Too much
that,
of a
really.
Party boy for that.
He'd have people do that for him from day one.
Yeah, like I'd imagine that if you went down to the local pro drum shop,
yeah,
there's probably not. You know, you got the Terry Bozio and the whoever, the Mike Portnoy, and then you got there's no Ringo DVD, and if there was, it would just be him jamming Beatles tunes.
Yeah, well, we were talking earlier on today about, and this is going to be reversed, I guess, for when the kind of audience hears this, but we were talking earlier on about how there's a Johnny Depp deep fake of Ringo as Jack Sparrow that's circulating the internet right now, and how Ringo's sort of legacy as the drummer in the Beatles is being threatened, kind of Stamos and Dennis Wilson style, by Johnny Depp, who's slowly just kind of sublimating himself into the character that is Ringo. And soon Ringo might even not be the drummer in the Beatles.
Yeah.
But that's just my take.
I hope that doesn't happen. It's funny, those deepfake things, I saw... what was the Scorsese movie where they spent millions of dollars in 3 years?
The Last Waltz, Irishman, I think, on Robbie Robertson's chest sweat.
Yeah, it was one of those. And then some college kid spent about a week and he redid all the stuff that they had spent millions on, and it was far better than... Like they did a side
really?
They did like a side by side with like the Pesci and De Niro from The Irishman, and then they're like, here's the deep fake that some kid just did on his iPhone, and it's like cost nothing, and it was far superior graphics.
And they spent like $100 million on that.
Have you seen the Tom Cruise deep fake TikTok?
Yeah,
no.
there's a guy that's does a good Tom Cruise impression.
It's just like a deep fake. Like it's literally like it only came out like a couple of weeks ago. I mean, there was an original deep fake where like Tom Cruise became like somebody else.
Bill
Hader. Hader, yeah. And no, now there's like a TikTok deep fake of Tom Cruise where it's like he's just... There's like many videos of Tom Cruise. Like it's just Tom Cruise being like, "Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Tom Cruise."
But it's just a guy, right?
Yeah, but it is Tom
Cruise.
In
his kitchen.
But it's Tom Cruise.
No, it is.
You gotta watch it. It's like,
I get it.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be cool because that technology is going to be really useful when like people get kind of Me Too'd or canceled, or like canceled on camera, because they can just say it never really happened. You're going to be like, it's a deep fake. It's not real.
It seems to already be working for
some. And I think that's what it was created for. I think it's a psyop, personally.
You think that Johnny Depp is like kind of up there with Mayer as far as blues players go? Or
He was for a while. His star has faded a bit in the last couple years.
Did you notice how Mayer on that album cover was kind of wearing some Johnny Depp style, like,
they're
bracelet? Like Pirates of the Caribbean's like bracelet, like leather bracelet stuff. Did you notice that?
Yeah, kind of like a late 90s cut jean that only a couple of guys still have access to.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
Kind of like a diesel like jean.
Yeah.
Maybe diesel. a bedazzled back pocket.
Yeah.
Below
it's not,
the
but
belt.
It's not like, it's not been like true religioned yet. You know what I mean? It's still kind of, still cool.
Yeah. And there's only a few guys that can still get access to the original cut.
Yeah,
Stills
absolutely.
Cool, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Stills kind of wore jeans like he'd kind of did like a real, in the late 70s, a kind of real football.
Yeah, but he was he was also like, that's more like also like Carmel County kind of draft dodger. Like,
well, that's when
military
he was
paranoid, kind of Vietnam, like just coming off the plane, dog soldiers with like a bag of heroin and my jeans I've worn the whole time I was on tour in Vietnam, kind of vibe too.
And when he was doing a lot of scuba diving in the coral reef in Hawaii, and his body was super cut.
Yeah, he was cut then. It's true.
So he could get into his old linebacker jeans.
Stills was cut? I've only seen it for a fair gap era. He always seemed like a real roly-poly looking little guy to me.
This is what he says on the Doom Tour, like 74 when they were prepping for the Doom Tour. He said he just got back from scuba diving in Hawaii and he was super cut. Hanging out on Neil's ranch, jamming for the tour.
Kind of mold bond tour.
He wished he could get that body back, quote unquote.
Cut and sort of like a Bob Hoskins,
yeah,
Anthony Hopkins.
DeVito kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of in a Danny DeVito kind of, that kind of cut.
What's his,
like kind of height? The Penguin era.
You know what his height is?
I think he's like, maybe like, 5'6", 220.
Okay, like kind of a fridge.
A blues still, fridge.
Still?
Kind of a blues fridge.
Yeah, 5'6", 220 sounds about right.
Hey, we're talking about kind of, you know.
I mean, back like, then, I don't know now. Probably 5'4", 250.
You know, we're kind of all been at the gym today. I don't know what your routine is. Maybe we should just go through it one by one. I was live
tweeting you guys as I was pumping. It was a hard
blues
thing.
Yeah,
you were trying to send me like a blues playlist. I got about 3 songs in and it was kind of bumming me out on the run. So I had to veer off. But I like that Bonnie Raitt. That was cool.
Well, I mean, all blues is kind of emotional, if that's what you mean.
Unless once I got to that, Jimmy Vaughn stuff was just brutal.
Fabulous Thunderbirds?
I couldn't really get into it. I don't know. But then
that's
Bruce Willis.
Height of blues.
The Bruce Willis stuff kind of brought me back.
Yeah.
You know
it's
what
like
I was
86
thinking?
To 92 is probably
kind of hanging out with Don Johnson, that kind of blues.
Yeah, that was the kind of when the best stuff was being made.
You know, I was thinking about you today, Luke, and I was thinking it's interesting to me that I know that you spend a lot of your free time watching a lot of kind of Seagal, Van Damme, action, Bruce Willis, you know, 80s, and that a lot of these guys also moonlighted as blues musicians, and you, so like, your kind of 2 main interests are like these kind of martial arts guys of
blues.
The 80s, early 90s, and blues music.
It's all blues,
and I was thinking, though, that's it. What is the parallel? What draws these martial artists to blues or vice versa? What is it?
Well, I think the martial arts and blues guitar are almost, you know, there's so many parallels between the two, and I'm almost like the belt system could almost be applied to both karate and to blues guitar. And obviously you got
your
black
belt guys.
Is it not
already? It's not already?
Well, not officially, but I'm sure on some of these chat forums that James Younger's reading through all day, every day, I bet it's pretty clear who the black
belts
are. Yeah,
Blues Junction and SteveHoffman.tv, they have kind of a ranking system based on the belt system of jiu-jitsu, I think. So,
but, just purely based on blues, I think that what your buddy Ramrod 2016 was saying about Brian May would probably be true, because I don't really consider him that bluesy.
No.
Well, apparently his fingering
is slack.
Apparently his fingering is like technique with his fingers isn't technically good enough to be considered, you know, kind of up there in the pantheon of blues guitarists. Another question.
Well, I just don't consider Queen blues.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking now that do you think it's, you know, maybe something to consider that if you are like a lethal blues player, like kind of a black belt,
deadly.
Yeah, deadly. You should warn people before jamming, the way that kind of like you have to if you're like a black belt. You have to warn someone 3 times before. Like, that's kind of the like code.
Well, I don't think you should warn anybody. I just think you should only bring out your guitar in a sanctioned event.
Right.
Where you have, you know, you have referees and you have, you know, security around.
Yeah.
And an audience. You don't just walk in, like a martial artist wouldn't just walk into a bar and start a fight.
No.
You don't walk into guitar.
Fuck out everybody.
No. Yeah, no, you don't walk into Guitar Center with like your Les Paul and just start playing blues.
I don't think it matters what guitar it is at that point.
Well, I think that It might, though. Like, I think that maybe that's part of why people don't like Brian May, is because he built his own guitar and
played
all that
with a nickel, kind of Gibbons style.
Exactly. It's more, you know, there's certain axes that, you know, from
they're
the
sacred.
Les Paul to the PRS,
yeah,
that are kind of sacred to blues.
Well, as somebody that's been you know, kind of hanging around in the Los Angeles and San Francisco blues
community.
Jam community for many a year, I can tell you from personal experience that the black belts are usually the ones that are not doing the jamming.
Exactly. Yeah.
They'd be the last ones to pick up the axe and get in there, because they don't want to hurt anyone. Yeah, they don't want anyone to get hurt.
No.
Yeah.
You think Thomas is up there?
Thomas, to me, is black belt, and
yeah,
I've never seen him play in public.
Yeah, 100%.
You know who's really, who I've seen kind of shred, kick some ass black belt style around your place, Luke, is that guy who plays with Austin. You know?
Ryan Richter.
Yeah, he'll kick some ass on the guitar. It's more country, I know, but
he's red belt. He's beyond black.
Yeah, he
uses his pinky to fret the low E, if that tells you anything.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you do it. I've tried it. My hands don't.
He's
even,
kind
I
mean, of got. He's more in video game, kind of Mortal Kombat Raiden territory. Like he's.
Yeah,
through,
I've never seen anyone fret the chords. He's come up with his whole own. It's like him and George Benson.
He's channeling, you
know, video game blues. That's another whole.
It's,
you guys,
not,
I'm just gonna. Yeah. I'm gonna have a take a little piss and grab a beer here.
We
Sorry.
Can take. We can just all take a second. Leave
Let's
everything
take
recording.
A second here.
I'll take a piss.
You're the only one there with an assistant. Can't she bring you a Gatorade bottle and a six
I'm
pack?
Not when I have to go to the bathroom, buddy.
There's no
Gatorade.
Time to
be right back.
I was just getting kind of, I was riffing.
Should we take a second? I could go run if we're doing it.
Just leave everything recording, though.
I got dogs barking now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, leave everything
bluesy.
Recording. I got a bit lined up on Dan Auerbach coming up here, so. I don't think that the police are very bluesy, if that's what you mean by that.
Not at all. It's a lot more challenging to try to come up with something that's not blues.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for people that
like Andy
are
Summers.
not bluesy.
You've switched between. I've seen it happen.
I heard Bandages on the radio on my way home tonight by Hot Hot Heat. It sounded great.
It's not bluesy.
No, it's not. But it's punk. It's punky.
It's new wave.
The amount of like attention to detail and the concentration involved and trying to make non-blues is, I mean, look, think about
I
what
know.
Tom York and Johnny Greenwood must go through. Like, if any chance of like a seventh chord or anything even remotely like a Hendrix-y lick, they just have to immediately cancel that session.
Yeah.
Well, that's when we were talking about Queen. I was thinking, like, honestly, I mean,
I'm with you.
We're having fun, but that, I like music that's, you know,
non-blues.
Well, it's a little more inventive, like you said.
To me, it's all blues, but you know, it all goes back to. I can find a way back to the blues through any of this stuff.
Of course, but come on.
You know, you sent that meme over, Luke. Some would call it a meme, some would call it accurate history.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, any blues connoisseurs are going to be going to the Imagine Dragons concert.
Yeah.
They might go and see the Black Keys, though, or Gary Clark Jr.
Well, yeah,
that's
isn't there
just pure blues.
Isn't there a new Black Keys release, Luke, you wanted to tell us about?
I haven't heard it, but I'd be happy to discuss it.
Remember when we saw that guy buying at that leather store in Hollywood that time?
Yeah, that was a very bluesy store. There was a lot of belt buckles and boots and
yeah.
It kind of smelled a little bit like, you know, rawhide and
why were we
wax.
In there, what were you looking to do that day?
I was trying to get my leather shoulder bag, the zipper repaired. Remember we were driving all, it was a very yeah. Hollywood day. We drove around to all the,
what was that old guy? What was that old guy leathersmith shop that we went to that was just amazing?
In the Mike's Tuxedos.
Mike's Tuxedo.
No. On, oh, Mike. He was dude, great.
Yeah, what was the, what street was that on?
I don't know. It was somewhere there in the right heart down. Of Hollywood, we, near Hollywood we Forever Cemetery.
Place. We went near into this place, James, like to try to get... They, we went to a place and they said, try Mike's Tuxedo.
Nice.
Like... on Hollywood or whatever. And Luke and I went into this place and you walk in and it was like take straight that, out man. Of a Lynch movie. Like just like this guy's been just walls of tuxedo. This guy's just been amazing. Outfitting, yeah. You know, B-list dead actors.
Celebrity
for,
funerals.
And mobsters.
Yeah. And yeah. Mobsters.
He looked a lot like Dean Stockwell from Blue Velvet, actually, yeah.
And he said...
How the
he
shit said, are you?
Yeah, exactly. he looked at Luke's... bag and he said he couldn't really help, like without even looking at it he just knew he couldn't really help us.
Surprised you didn't go east to the fashion district, yeah. Chinatown kind of go
well
noir.
when Johnny comes to town he likes to do mostly just the straight up Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, I like so to stick
we,
to the
I would have tried Bunker Hill out maybe.
That's a different scene. No, when Johnny's here, it's just straight up Formosa Cafe, El Coyote,
yeah.
Rainbow, Whiskey, Roxy.
Yep, Dantana's, yeah.
I mean, when I've been to L.A. like 15 times since I've known you, Luke, and you've made it clear that you won't even go west.
I know. I'm always depressed after Johnny makes me do these things.
I take him over to Barney's Beanery and we talk about Janis Joplin all night and he gets bummed out.
Pop shit.
Well, I think it's nice to do some tourist things even in your own town every once in a while. I'm sure over the last year when you guys have been stuck at your homes, you've probably maybe ventured out to different kind of outdoor locales that you wouldn't. For I mean, sure. I don't know if people know this, but I used to live in Vancouver off and on for almost a decade.
No one from Vancouver listens to the show, man. Don't worry.
Most of the listeners are probably from LA, actually.
From O'Brien.
Well, when I hear you guys talking about things like Kitts Beach and Third Beach, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. I've never been there.
You didn't really go to the beach much because you'd spend most of your time on Main Street up at Burt's Cafe.
No, you were more
pancakes.
Of a kind of save on meats guy. Kind of like Funky Winker Beans, that kind of
thing. Funkies, you definitely.
Yeah, I was between Abbott Street downtown and like kind of the Mount Pleasant area. I don't know what's popping over there in Mount Pleasant these days.
One of my favorite stories about Luke is I remember we made a plan to... have breakfast one day, and I called him at about 10 a.m., and, you know, this is the kind of great guy he is, and I called him, and he picked up. He's like, hello, and I was like, hey, man, are we still going for breakfast this morning? And he said, well, I just went to bed like 2 hours ago, but let's do it. I'll meet you at Burt's in an hour, you know, in half an hour or whatever. And I just remember I went into Burt's, and he had that real, you know, up all night, sunglasses on,
kind of
look
energy.
in the booth, yeah. And I just remember the waitress walked up and he just looked at her with his shades on and he just said, "You got any dragon juice?" And I never knew what it meant.
Did,
and I always
did
wondered.
She say yes?
No, she said no.
Well, I don't think Johnny knows about the first Razorlight album, James.
Yeah, but did you like that?
I liked it because I come from kind of an early 2000s non-blues world. So
by throwing that in there.
I had that album, but I don't know if Johnny...
I'm sure you and Burrell spent a lot of time in like kind of old white denim hanging around and kind of, you know, manumission nightclub or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but they were headlining Reading and Leeds and we were kind of in the side tent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a lot of... That's, you know... You didn't ride, Golden Touch, man.
Great song.
Great song, actually.
At that time, I was mostly listening to
blues.
Uncle.
Honestly, blues. Yeah. like kind of see, down stills. No, I was into stills at that time. Like I was like, no, Manassas. Like
yeah,
seriously,
it's good stuff.
Like at that time that like Razor Light was out, I was like, Manassas is the best band. Or
you
something.
Kinda
you
kind of had a
I mean?
Johnny Burrell look, actually. You know, once when I was in Manchester when I lived there, I worked in this bar called the Roadhouse, and Guided by Voices played there, and like obviously like kind of cult band. And yeah. I remember the bass player from Razor Light showing up, and they weren't famous yet, and he was sat at the bar. He watched them, you know, they played for like 4 hours, about 80 people there. I remember him explaining to me he was in a band called Razor Light. He got so drunk that I walked him to his hotel, and then when they got famous, I'd see that guy all around and think, you know, there's a story. He actually likes music, you know, he's into this stuff.
For sure.
Yeah.
I hated everything. That was like yeah. kind of my that was my thing, you know.
Right.
Like I was yeah. into hating any new music kind of in the early
energy.
2000s.
Still.
No, I can get into it now. A bit. Well, like
well,
I don't seek it out.
We've talked about making an indie dance party playlist.
No, I like a lot of the music from that era now that I didn't like then. And I also will like new music if it's shown to... I don't actively seek out a ton, I'll admit that. But I don't think any of us here do. Maybe,
I do.
Maybe James.
I do for sure.
If
I listen to quite a bit of new stuff, but it's not necessarily...
Mostly
blues. Hip-hop. Yeah, it's not a lot of guitar music. I don't
kind
know.
Neo-soul hip-hop.
Yeah, I don't know how much guitar we're ever going to see ever
kinda like
again.
I don't know. The Burbank kind of neo-soul scene's pretty cool. You know, Steve Lacy, he's kind of good on the guitar. I like his vibe.
Yeah, I went to the strangest post-pandemic get-together the other night. And, you know, it was typical, like, east downtown, Skid Row, kind of walk through an alley and give your password and go through these
yeah.
double doors, and all of a sudden you're in some big warehouse that's just full of like beautiful people.
It's amazing.
And you have no idea.
I went to one like that last time I was down there. It was weird.
Yeah, and there's just like an incredible like kind of jazz kind of jam kind of fusion band just playing, and like just like all the you know, Oscar Award nominee Lakeith sure. Stanfield just yeah. in the corner. It was just one
incredible.
Of those kind of, you're
wow.
like, thank God that we still...
Well, no, I mean, this music sounds like amazing. If you guys, honestly, if you guys, and James, you've done this with me, like, you've sent me new stuff that you find, and I'm...
Yeah,
that's
you get,
my,
real,
the
you get really defensive about it, though, when I send it to you and say I want
what?
To listen. You say, like, I'm kind of only into Wings, you know, and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, please. No. You sent me something recently. I loved it. But, no, back in the day, though, what I'm saying is I could not. I had no time for it. But now I really do like to hear when there's good stuff coming out, you know?
I think I sent you UMO. I said, I think you'd like UMO. And
I
stand by that. He's a good guitarist. Really
I listen to everything I'm sent. I listen to everything I'm sent.
I don't think so, man, because I sent you a lot of John Spencer, Blues Explosion, great blues artist.
Today, you listen. I told you to make me a playlist. I was running. I was trying
to
click... I was trying to click on, like, go to my text, and you guys kept texting, so I kept having to, like, scroll back through it.
Well, I mean, I was pumping iron at the time myself, and I was able to navigate.
Not running. You weren't running, were you?
Full speed. It was an all-out sprint.
Well, then I just put on Joe Walsh, Rocky Mountain Way radio,
oh, yeah.
and that just set me straight for the whole right. 8K that I was doing. It was perfect.
Can I ask you guys a question? Since we're back, I tried to ask it you earlier, but got sidetracked. But since we're talking about the gym and pumping and stuff,
mm-hmm.
anyone got any insights into Joe Perry's pectoral kind of training regime?
I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say it's all genetics. Because I know a lot of people like Dan Colucci types who don't even really work
Italians,
out that much. And they Italian, exactly, who just kind of have that... that sort of like wiry upper bod with that look. And, you know, a lot of people I know who pump iron all the time who don't get that, you know, so.
The olive skin.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful thing.
Dan Colucci never worked out a day ever when I, like, when we were in the Shilohs in the in our 20s. He always, body always looked exactly like Joe Perry. Always. Yeah. So it's just, I think it's genetics, you know?
Okay.
But well, like you see that, you see that video of him and Steven Tyler with Jimmy Page, you know, when he comes backstage to ask about when he's supposed to come in and play the blues solo on Train Kept a Rollin' or whatever.
Yeah.
You know the video. And
I
they're
don't remember
back,
if I don't remember if Joe Perry's topless or not.
They're both topless. Him and
everyone's topless.
Him and Steven Tyler. And the best part is that like they're kind of hanging out, like drinking a beer, and then they go to like take a photo with Jimmy Page and the two of them like totally suck in their gut.
Nice.
And it's just like, you know what I mean? So I think they were just, even that, they were like kind of, they weren't working out. They just like.
No, during that, by then they were pump. That's kind of pump era.
They like had someone else writing the songs for them. It was all about just fitness and riffs.
They were hitting the gym more than they were even jamming at that.
For sure,
I don't know if you've seen the documentary Aerosmith's Making of Pump.
Vancouver.
There's a five-parter on, you can probably get it on the YouTube.
Yeah.
And they're in the gym, buddy.
Yeah.
They're talking about how much pumping it requires. Because they're...
To maintain.
They're about our age, let me say again, at that point in their career.
Yeah.
And maybe when they were younger, they didn't have to pump, but there comes a time if you want to maintain this impossible way of life.
Yeah,
you got to keep it tight.
Yeah,
yeah.
We don't like to talk too much about it.
Why do you think Jagger and Richards and the Stones stopped writing songs? There's no time to do both things.
Yeah,
you just have to decide at some point whether it's going to be the gym and your live show or songwriting. Because no one wants to see a fat guy on stage. Straight up, you can even go bald. You just can't be fat.
I tell you, I'm trying to write songs and pump up every day, and it's a goddamn impossible way of life.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Are all the songs about
a lot of them are getting
in shape?
Well, that's the kind of an 80s blues fitness kind of.
Well, I haven't written the lyrics yet because of that problem. Yeah,
let's get physical.
Exactly.
There was a whole
Flashdance vibe.
Yeah, there was a whole kind of aerobics rock
movement.
Yeah, that was a great time. There's like a lot of Travolta dancing and a lot of oiled up, tanned bodies and
it's
things.
It's kind of Flashdance, kind of really, isn't it? And like a lot of Kenny Loggins energy.
Huge drum sound.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was listening to that Bonnie Raitt. They even showcase it when it breaks down. Let's give them something to talk about. And there's just the drums rocking. And
Stamos
it's just
style.
Massive Stamos style drums.
You think Bonnie Raitt's top female blues guitarist?
She opened for the Stones on a couple big tours ago.
I think she's top slide blues guitarist.
Yeah.
Period.
I love her. Yeah.
Really?
You're the one that had to gender it.
Well, I just was reading an article.
You backwards. I know the equal rights stuff hasn't gotten up to Canada yet.
No, it's not. Well, I tell you what, the woman,
the blues hasn't either. Apparently,
that's not quite true because the winner of the best blues album of the year at the Junos this year was a female artist called Crystal Shawanda. And her record is called Church House Blues. I'll play you a little bit of it.
Let's hear it.
That's kind of a Dire Straits tone.
Yeah.
But she comes in hot, though.
Fourth pick, the fourth section of the...
Almost.
Is she on guitar?
No, she's just singing. And wait till she comes in because she's certainly bluesy.
Sunday morning, right? I caught him dancing in the aisles like the roadhouse we played last night.
bluesy, right?
Wow.
Wow, they lost me with that little kind of descending line.
Yeah, that wasn't that bluesy,
that's,
actually.
That's not blues. That's like chord changes and stuff. I don't like that. I don't
well,
that
gets more into the Amy Winehouse kind of Motown territory, which is more musical.
Yeah. No, I like maybe... I don't know. It did definitely have that kind of 87, 88 Vancouver drum sound, though.
Yeah, Clear Mountain.
Luke, yeah. I just want to clear the air right now and know right off the bat, off the top of your head, give me your top five right now, because we've been really into ranking lately. Like
lists.
We've been really into charts. listing and ranking. We feel
I
like
love
it's,
charts, lists, graphs.
Well, now that we're getting kind of pretty big on the sort of classic rock podcast circuit, I don't really know if there are any other podcasts besides ours, but
it's me and my friend's favorite by far.
Yeah, so we figure that we need to do what everybody else has done who's been big, like Frick, Rolling Stone, Colin Larkin's top 10,000
industry standard
album, Guinness Book of World Records kind of stuff, and just start ranking and listing everything we possibly can.
I got Slash's top 10 up here right now.
Yeah, well, I want to know the Luke Paquin official top five blues guitarists.
Okay.
Not talking technical. I'm not talking anything. I'm just talking your top, buddy. Blues. Blues.
Can we hear the Slash ones first, just so I make sure that mine's as good as his?
Well, this is his favorite favorite 10 riffs.
I know that he said Bonnie Raitt was his favorite guitarist. That's how I stole that idea.
Well, his top 10 riffs.
Oh, riffs.
Yeah. I Want You, She's So Heavy.
That's a good riff.
Back in the Saddle. Aerosmith.
Definitely.
Yeah. He says it's one of the sexiest.
Definitely.
He says it's
I'm completely in agreement.
Sexiest, sleaziest riffs to come along since Whole Lot of Love.
He just is, Luke. Luke, do you take a lot of your terminology from Slash, too? Or
He's definitely been a big influence, but a lot of people don't know that's not a guitar. That's a six-string bass.
Interesting. Wow. Wow.
Joe Perry played that quite a bit. Show Your Love, I'm the One, Van Halen.
Wow, that's odd. That's an odd choice.
Superstition, Jeff Beck. That's your wah blues, I guess.
I ain't superstitious, that one.
Superstition by Jeff Beck.
I don't think it's called Superstition. It's called I Ain't Superstitious by Jeff Beck.
Let's see what Paste magazine says. You want me to pull it up?
That's a complicated it's a complicated issue because
with Rod Stewart on vocals, right?
No, but Jeff Beck was with Stevie Wonder when they made that. He did help him make that song.
So he did the riff for Superstitious?
Let's listen to this. Hang on. Jeff Beck was playing drums. Live. I guess it's his riff.
I think that might be true. It might be true.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty sleazy. I mean, it sounds like his riff.
But yeah, I think Jeff Beck and Stevie wrote that song together.
Okay.
That's fucking
wicked.
This
is big news. Just continue, because I can't even get this in my head right now. What's next?
Disposable Heroes. I think that's off Master of Puppets, right? Metallica.
Wow.
Life in the Fast Lane.
That's an incredible list.
That's a good
list. More of that jazz, Queen. We've gone full circle, buddy.
Which Queen lick is that?
More of that jazz? Let's
pull it up.
Yeah, you'd have to remind me how
Let's
that
get
is.
It up.
I don't know that one.
He's a, you know, he's grown up in Stoke, right? In England. Here we go. Here it is.
Yeah, he's a Brit.
Born on the Bayou?
Kinda.
Wow. Okay.
Which part is the riff part?
I guess it's the Brian May bit.
There's a couple tasty little licks going on there.
I guess it's the kind of like hammer on, like the
sound like Roger Taylor singing.
Okay,
what's next?
Purple Haze, number three.
Yeah, yeah,
sure.
Over Under Sideways Down by the Yardbirds.
Great.
Yeah,
and then Black Dog, his number one.
Great riff.
Yeah.
Okay, so Luke, would you rather do top five riffs or guitarists?
I mean, I wasn't prepared for any of this. Okay, you said this was an emergency meeting.
We can get back to you on it. I don't want to put anyone
get back
under any
to you
pressure. We're just all trying to have a nice time.
I don't mind it. I think of these things as being ever fluid, and there's no real... I mean, doesn't Pitchfork redo theirs every couple weeks?
Just give me your guitar top five blues guitar players, okay?
Ever.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be in order either. Just five of them. Yeah, ever.
Well, you got to go Clapton number one. That's just obvious. No, there's no.
You're not gonna go Stevie Ray?
There's no debate as to who the top is.
Okay, when you're talking blues, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's earned it. He's okay. Trademarked it. He's he's got the most sponsorships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has his own blues festival named after one of his own albums that it's also named after Where You Sell Your Soul.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people feel like a lot of blues kind of aficionados respect his decision to kind of like focus more on songwriting and singing post Cream, but feel like, you know, he kind of turned his back on the blues a little bit there.
Well, he did hook up with Baby Pace and do like...
What, From the Cradle?
If I Could Change the World. He did
gave
that
blues
kind of stuff.
A huge shot in the arm with From the Cradle in 94, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he did Tears in
still
the Heaven.
That's still bluesy. Okay, what's number two, buddy?
Now that's tough.
Johnny Winter.
That would probably have to be a tie between Stevie Ray and probably G.E. Smith of the Saturday Night Live band.
Nice, yeah. See, yeah,
I don't see what's so fucking funny. Yeah.
Well, I told you
this is serious before we started this.
No, I'm just only laughing at the fact that, I mean, are you basing that purely on his SNL material? Work.
Well, yeah, the Saturday Night Live
band. Because he wasn't making albums. You know what I mean? I'm naive. I'm saying I'm the ignorant one, I'm sure. But you're basing that on his SNL stuff, right? And maybe his work with Dylan?
Well, I just think that the Saturday Night Live band, and in particular G.E. Smith, might be the greatest blues group ever assembled.
Okay.
Maybe. I might want to throw in a kind of Big Joe Turner, a kind of West Coast guy in. Or you might throw a guy like that in at some point.
I don't even know who that is.
Who's number three, Luke? Keep it rolling. Keep the train rolling.
It's got to be SRV, right?
Sure.
Okay. So far, no sign of Hendrix, Page. It's very
Robert
interesting.
Johnson.
Those guys can't even play.
Yeah. Sun House. None of that stuff. John Hurt.
Number four, number four is the one I'm really curious about. I knew you'd go Clapton, SRV, G. Smith, top three. But now
you knew that?
Yeah, I did, because we taught. Yeah.
You just knew.
But now, and
based
top
on
four,
your track record, I'm thinking you want to go with the first white musician to gain acceptance in the blues scene, which would be Butterfield.
He didn't play guitar, though, did he?
It's irrelevant. We're talking about blues.
No,
it's,
I'm talking guitarists.
Okay, not harp.
No, guitarists. Okay. What I want to know.
I missed that. Male.
That's tough.
He didn't. Wait, did he play guitar? I don't know. Can't think of number four.
No, I mean, this is, I hope you guys know this was not pre-planned. I'm just flowing here.
Yeah,
you're in a flow state.
I'd probably have to go Rate number four.
Only Rate four.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's up there.
Dan Auerbach, Mayer. Bonamassa, Gary Clark Jr. Apparently the Spin Doctors put out a pretty good blues record.
I forgot that guy's name. He's got some great lyrics.
In 2013, If the River Was Whiskey, it was a real good record by them.
I mean, I'm sure there's some people, maybe Robert Cray would be up there.
Yeah. Lead Belly.
You've always talked to me about Robert Cray, man. I might
put Cray number four.
Yeah. Rate five.
I mean, I love Rate, but she's most like purely more of a slide player, which to me, I put the top five slide as a completely different.
Yeah,
like, we could talk slide work all day, man.
Yeah,
but that's almost a different beast. That's more of like a Rye Cooter Rate.
You don't want to put Muddy Waters in. You're talking about post wah, kind of. You know, it kind of all starts.
He's
there.
Good.
B.B. King was in a car.
I like Albert King. I like Albert King a lot. I don't really like B.B. King.
Don't go cutting your hair. That's a good song.
I'd probably go Keb Mo number five.
Probably end it there then.
All right, you guys, I gotta get going here. Seriously, I'm gonna go have a margarita with my lady friend. And I love you both, and I can't wait till the next. There's a lot of blues to discuss still, and we will.
Of course there is. It's only blues.
It's an ongoing search.
But I thought that had a kind of a bluesy.
The one who's got the furthest. It was kind of bluesy this episode.
I thought that had kind of a mellow bluesy feel the whole episode in a cool way.
I'm sorry, Bonnie got knocked out of the top five there.
That's all right. We know.
But
we've...
still, number one slide.
Yeah.
Right. Bonnie, Cooter, Gallagher,
Yanch.
Well, he's more folky. I think Django. What Luke's doing, he's not putting anybody who even crosses genres at all. Like, he doesn't consider like a Neil or a Page or a Keith or anybody as blues because they cross into others.
Claps
he's going strict.
Loads.
Well, I mean, did he though?
I kind of think he only reggae did blues. Shit.
Yeah, but it's still blues. It's straight blues. If his version of "I Shot the Sheriff" is like a blues version,
I don't know why he's so. He thinks it's not what he needs to tell people. He only shot the deputy. I mean, he's going to be in trouble either way.
Exactly.
That's what I was thought.
We have to take that up with Bob Marley. Yeah, you know who? Way. I mean, Peter Tosh is great. He plays some good. It's reggae, but he's got some sick licks.
Yeah, he's good. He's no Bonamassa.
That's a cool two guitar attack. Bob Marley and Peter Tosh had a good two guitar attack, hey?
Well, hey, that's another hour two guitar attack.
Yeah. We could talk a lot about fitness regimes with those guys too, because those guys were running marathons and playing soccer every day.
I know. I thought this kind of stuff was supposed to be a secret. We didn't want to let the fans know how in shape we really are.
Well.
Okay.
Well, I wanted people to think that Johnny Payne's bod was just straight
natural.
Out of the womb, baby. Yeah.
Kind of
genetic,
like Perry style.
Yeah.
No, I don't have those Italian genes like Dan Calusi. But
you look pretty tight to me, baby.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, you're a sweet guy. I love you both. See you soon, okay?
Okay, all see right. you guys. Send me your
peace.
Audio
party.
And shit. Okay,
bye-bye. Let's party.
Send me your nudes.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, great.
Peace.